Translation: at that time, after traveling in many parts of the world, Maitreya, a great devotee of the Lord and a friend and well-wisher of the great sage, Krishna Dwaipan Vyas, reached that spot out of his own perfect accord. Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Yeah. Maitreya was one of the disciples of Maharshi Parasar, the father of Vyasdev. Thus, Vyasdev and Maitreya were friends and mutual well-wishers. By some fortunate accident, Maitreya reached that place where Lord Krishna was resting. To meet the Lord is not an ordinary incident. Maitreya was a great sage and a learned scholar-philosopher, but not a pure devotee of the Lord. And therefore, his meeting with the Lord at that time may have been due to agyata sukriti, or some unknown devotional service. Pure devotees always engage in pure devotional activities, and therefore their meeting with the Lord is natural. But when those who are not up to that standard meet the Lord, it is due to the unforeseen fortune of accidental devotional service. Tasmin Mahabhagavato Dvaipayana Suhrit Sakha Lokananucharan Siddha Asasada Yadrichaya. At that time, after travelling in many parts of the world, Maitreya, a great devotee of the Lord, and a friend and well-wisher of the great sage Krishna Dwaipan Vyas, reached that spot out of his own perfect accord. Om Agnanatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam, Savadutam, Parichana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Pada, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakam Bitamscha, He Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kantha, Radha Kantha Namastute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vanchakalpataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Bhye Bacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Hare Krishna. So we'll try to say something of worth based on Srila Prabhupada's purports and the verse from Bhagavatam, and seeking the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, the senior Vaishnavas, on site and online. So I think the good thing is what we can do is we'll do a quick recap of where we're at in terms of the timeline, because obviously, last couple of weeks, we've been going back to Vidura again. So, if you remember, in Canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vidura went on pilgrimage. This is when, he got insulted in the Kuru dynasty in the palace of Hastinapur, where he was one of the ministers, one of the advisors. For those of you who are familiar with Mahabharata, which is one of our big epics, historical epics, and he was constantly trying to give good advice to his brother Dhritarashtra, but because Dhritarashtra was constantly under the evil influence of his, son Duryodhan and his brother-in-law Shakuni, he was unable to listen to the good advice that Vidura was giving. And then at one point, Vidura was at the end of his tether, trying to just give constant good advice and being rejected again and again. And so then he started chastising Dhritarashtra. And then Duryodhan did not like it, so Duryodhan then started to insult him and basically tell him that, you know what, you're just a son of a maidservant, get out of this place, just leave this place, you're not welcome here. So Vidura, being a great Vaishnav, and also someone who embodies the qualities of forbearance, tolerance, and forgiveness to some, to full extent. He could have fought back, but he didn't. He left that place because he realized that he'd be wasting his time being there. And when a Vaishnav has to go from one place to another, they always look at how is this opportunity helped me to develop my connection with Krishna. So utilize that time to then go on pilgrimage to go deeper into his spiritual life. Like a lot of you here, I can see in this temple room, have probably taken time out of your normal life to come and like be on a pilgrimage here at the temple by doing like, you know, the residential courses and things like that to deepen your connection with Krishna. So Vidura did the same thing by going to various places of pilgrimage. And one of the things that Vidura did was he took the association of one of Krishna's pure devotees, Uddhava. So Uddhava is a great personality. And Uddhava, as you can see from the last few verses, he was very fortunate in being one of the few personalities to see Krishna in the last stages before Krishna left this world. And, well, you know, unmanifested his pastimes from the Mahabharat Leela, right? Very few people saw him at the last stages. And as you can see, Uddhava was in pain of separation. Krishna had just left. And Uddhava, then eventually Vidura meets with Uddhava. And you can see that at the beginning of Canto 3, we see that the sages at Naimisharanya, they're asking now Shaurnak Rishi, what happened with Vidura? Because, you know, we had mentioned Vidura at the beginning, at the end of Canto 1, then all these other things happened, like, you know, the narrations and pastimes. So now the sages want to go back to Vidura and then ask, like, okay, so what happened here? You know, what happened with Vidura again? So, not just what happened, but what topics did they discuss? What did Vidura discuss with Uddhava? And eventually, what topics did Vidura discuss with Maitreya Muni? Right? So, we see that Vidura, in his pilgrimage, he meets Uddhava just after Uddhava speaks the Uddhava Gita, which is the most confidential aspect of the Gita, like an extension of the Bhagavad Gita that we already know. So we know that Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna to Arjun, and almost like, you know, when you have a book which is giving you like all this like deep knowledge, and then there's like an extra book to go even deeper, like a more exclusive edition. So in the same way, Krishna then imparted even more intimate truths, esoteric knowledge to Uddhava through the Uddhava Gita. So there's not just the Bhagavad Gita, there's Uddhava Gita. There's also a few other Gitas as well. But for us, you know, we just need to know that there's Uddhava Gita here. So he spoke the Uddhava Gita. And of course, Uddhava was in a terrible sense of pain and separation from Krishna. We know that one of the deep relationships that one can have with Krishna is the mood of separation, because that increases the hankering, the attraction to want to then reunite with Krishna. And so in Sanskrit, it's called Vrippalamba Bhav. Bhav means mood, and Vrippalamba means to separate. Separation, uniting. With Krishna, there's always this kind of, this mood, this fluctuating mood going on by separating and uniting. Vrippalamba Bhav and Sambhoga Bhav. Sambhoga means to unite again. And we see that even Krishna in his pastimes with the gopis, with Radharani, sometimes he'll come out of their association and it just increases the mood of wanting to, you know, pine for each other. It's a spiritual emotion, obviously. Uddhava then starts to describe Krishna's pastimes, kind of in chronological order over the last few chapters, you know, from Krishna's childhood, his time in Vrindavan, his time in Mathura, his pastimes defeating Jarasand. It's like, you know, little snippets of Krishna's pastimes going through his life, you know, all the way up to the Krishna's role in the battle of Kurukshetra. We go even further, how Krishna then rescued Parikshit Maharaj whilst Parikshit Maharaj was a fetus in the womb of his mother, Uttara, all the way up to Yudhishthir being installed on the throne. And through it all, actually, because, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he could have, like, you know, he doesn't need to do all these pastimes. And, you know, through his pastimes, isn't that Krishna, being God, just puts himself
through like a very hunky-dory life. He shares in the pain and the pleasures of us mere mortals to show us how to go through the obstacles in life and then develop a higher connection through it. It's not that he kind of like just put himself in a nice comfortable position. He went through a lot of the experience, a lot of the issues that we have to go through in life, and a way to teach us how to deal with those lessons. Just like a parent will teach the child, or a teacher teaches a child through example. It could be something simple, like, you know, when a child is, you know, trying to teach your child how to tie their shoelaces, sometimes the parent will themselves tie the shoelaces first just to show to the child that this is how you do it, right? So like this, we can see that, you know, Krishna's really showing all these kind of things. In fact, even like showing Yudhishthir Maharaj being installed on the throne and accepting his supremacy in itself is amazing, because, and we know this because, you know, last few verses we've talked about the Yadus. And the Yadus were, I would say, arguably one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, warrior community existing at the time. And of course, Krishna was there, part of that Yadu community. He could have easily taken over the world, but he didn't. He accepted Yudhishthir and the Pandavas as the supreme emperors of the world, and then put his own kind of like kingdom as a, you know, vassal state under the power of the Kuru dynasty. And even within the Yadu dynasty, Krishna didn't even put himself as the head of the Yadus. He put his, I think it was Ugrasen, right? Ugrasen, his grandfather, as the head of the Yadus, and then his own father, Vasudev, and then himself in a subordinate position, even though he is God. So God will sometimes do that. He will put himself in a subordinate position just to kind of show how to kind of like harmonize with the world. So yeah, it's amazing, you know, and we can see that then even in Dwarka, you know, Krishna then showed, and these are verses that you would have covered, right, over the week. So I'm sure this is all familiar to you, right? And then Krishna then talked about, we see how Uddhava was describing Krishna and how he dealt with his wives, following the regulative injunctions of how to be a proper husband, and, you know, like dealing with his wives in a proper Vaishnav manner, almost playing the role of an attached householder dealing with material responsibilities. And then when the time is right, Krishna then also renounced the householder life. This is why, you know, Krishna then left the householder thing. Remember, this is God. He doesn't need to do any of this. He doesn't need to deal with the material responsibilities of householder life and dealing with all the issues that come with it. He doesn't need to then let go of the householder life. He can do anything he wants. But he does it just to show us the example of what are the different stages of human life and how to play the role in each stage of your life in the perfect way possible, giving us the kind of operational manual of how to live life in the right way. And then, just to kind of finish it all, you can see that at the end of it, when Krishna's, you know, unmanifesting himself from the earth, he decides to then get rid of his own warriors, right? The Yadus, they were the most powerful warriors. They could have just stayed on and took over the whole world. But Krishna realized that, no, now's the time for me to wrap up my pastimes and take my people, like my kingdom people, away with me. And actually, Prabhupada says, actually, in the purports, that even though externally it looked like these great warriors got overcome by, you know, quarrels and arguments with each other in a drunken state, because, you know, warriors would drink and party and fight, right? That's what warriors do. You see that in all cultures, all histories, right? Actually, Prabhupada said, even though it might look like some mode of ignorance, drunken state that they all got into, actually it wasn't. It was a spiritual pastime where all the Yadus, I guess you could say on an esoteric level, they knew what they were doing. Like, they were playing the roles of these warriors that fell out with each other and then killed each other. But it's almost like, you know, like their higher selves were already in, you know, communication with Krishna, aware that, okay, this is what we need to do, you know. So let us wrap up our pastimes and things, you know. So like this, Uddhava, he was recalling all this to Vidura. Now, then what happened was, Uddhava obviously went to, when Krishna was relating the Uddhava Gita to Uddhava, he told him to go to Badrik Ashram to share with the sages that he's going to now leave the planet and just to comfort them and give them higher spiritual knowledge. Doesn't even know what Uddhava did at that time. Did he go to Badrik Ashram? No. Instead, he was so in pain of being separated from Krishna, he decided not to go to Badrik Ashram, but instead followed Krishna to where Krishna wanted to go. So Krishna decided to go to a spot in a place called Prabhas, where he rested under a tree. I believe it's a peepal tree. Someone can clarify that for me. Peepal tree, right? Yeah. He rested in a peepal tree with the mood that he's now going to leave this world from that spot, right? So Uddhava followed him, and this is actually where we have Maitreya entering the scene. So as you can see from this verse, once Uddhava was at this place with Krishna, Maitreya then comes there as well. And it's said here that in the verse itself, it's said that Maitreya was a great devotee of the Lord, and then reached that spot, the spot where Krishna and Uddhava were together, right, out of his own perfect accord. Now, it's interesting, in the verse it says, Maitreya is a great devotee of the Lord. But what does it say in the purport? Can someone, doesn't even know what it says in the purport? Does it say that he's a great devotee of the Lord? No. It says actually that he's a great sage, a learned scholar and philosopher, but not a pure devotee of the Lord. So this seems to be externally a bit of a contradiction. In fact, not only that, in the verse actually, it says that he's a great devotee. He's a friend of Vyasadev. Vyasadev, for those of you who don't know, is the one that actually compiled the Vedas for us for this age so that we can learn about Krishna consciousness. Vyasadev is also a literary incarnation of the Lord. So Krishna comes in various incarnations with different purposes, and Vyasadev is his literary incarnation, incarnated to put the knowledge of the Vedas in the form of books and scriptures for us to learn from. So how can a person like Maitreya not be a pure devotee? But Prabhupada said he's not a pure devotee. So one of the things we have to understand when we're looking at scriptures is that there are different terms and they are sometimes used in different ways. So for example, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says a devotee is someone who's, I'm paraphrasing here, but a devotee is someone who will have just heard the Hare Krishna mantra being sung on the streets, right? So that means on Saturday or whenever we go Harinams in central London and all these people are hearing the Hare Krishna chanting, that means they're all like technically devotees, right? But then Mahaprabhu also says that no, then a devotee is someone who's chanting, X amount of rounds per day, following, with certain level of purity. And then Mahaprabhu then goes even further that no, a devotee is someone who's fully immersed in the holy names and it can even inspire others to chant. So there's, depending on the context of what Mahaprabhu is saying in which section of the books, the definition of the devotee varies. Right? So similarly, here, Maitreya is a devotee, but Prabhupada is clarifying not a pure devotee. There are different gradations of devotee. We can see this in other terms as well. We often hear the word Brahman. Now, we often know that Brahman means impersonal liberation. And by and large, Prabhupada clarifies it as being impersonal liberation. But then there are times when you find, for example, in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati, where Brahman can also mean liberation in devotion as well, where Brahman can also actually mean devotional bhakti. In fact, in Canto 3, Chapter 25, Verse 19, it's said that Prabhupada talks about Brahma Siddhi, means like perfection of Brahman, and Prabhupada clarifies it means bhakti, not Brahman realization. So what I'm trying to say is that when you read the scriptures, you'll see a certain term being used in slightly different ways in different parts of the books. This is why it's very valuable to actually look at what Prabhupada has to say on these, because Prabhupada clarifies what is being said. I hope that makes sense. Yeah. So similarly, the term devotee here means various things, right? Prabhupada also, for example, the word Bhagavan. We know that Bhagavan refers to Krishna. But Prabhupada also clarifies that, again, in Canto 3, Chapter 25, Verse 4, Bhagavan in some cases can also refer to Krishna's devotees. So we have to be conscious of this. Okay, so let's get to Maitreya, because this verse is basically talking about Maitreya Rishi. Obviously with Maitreya, there must have been some shortcoming, some disqualification, where Prabhupada said he was not a pure devotee of the Lord. Right? But Prabhupada then goes on to say that he still got to see the Lord because of what is called agyata sukriti. Agyata means unknown devotional service, unknown devotional mercy. Sometimes when one is not qualified, one can still get agyata sukriti. Once Srila Prabhupada, you know, in the books, Bhagavad Gita, often Prabhupada says that it's not by accident that one comes to Krishna consciousness. It may be that you may have done Krishna consciousness in your previous lives, and now you're here, and now you're carrying on. And then once the Prabhupada's disciples then asked him in a conversation, so Prabhupada, does that mean that we were great devotees in our previous lives? Does that mean that we were great yogis and things? And Prabhupada says, no, I created your devotional life for you. So sometimes it's not that we are all just great, great, you know, high-level personalities, but just by the mercy of some great devotee, we have come to this position where we're able to kind of, you know, practice Krishna consciousness and, you know, really like relish it. So we see many examples. Can anyone think of any examples of devotees who may not have been pure devotees, but they managed to get the Lord's association? Okay, yeah, Ajamil is a great example. Yeah, he just by chanting the Narayan, he named his son Narayan, and even though he led a very like debauched life, but still, just because he named his son Narayan, he then, you know, when at the time of his death, he was screaming out of fear for his son, and then because of that, then the Lord's representatives came, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji Ki, Shri Shri Gonitai Ki. So yeah, Ajamil, he actually came, and then through that, he got delivered. He got the Lord's mercy, just through the holy names. The holy names are the most powerful, actually. That's why it says that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, he reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die when... When thou art living, they spread the holy names around. Yeah, yeah. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die when Vaishnavas die. Thou art living still in sound. Vaishnavas die to live and then spread the holy names around. Yeah. So the holy name is the key. That's actually what's going to actually like really kind of connect us to Krishna. So we see that in example of Ajamil. Another example of someone who may not have had the initial qualification to actually connect with the Lord was Migrari. Yes, Migrari the hunter. So I don't know if any of you know the example of Migrari. He was actually a sadistic hunter who would kill the animals, but he wouldn't kill them fully. He would half kill them, so they'd be lying there like suffering in a tortured way, just so you can get some pleasure from it. And but because of the association of a pure devotee, Narad Muni, Migrari actually got reformed, and then, you know, Narad Muni showed him the error of his ways, and then because of that, he then became a pure devotee, got connection with the Lord. There are many examples. Another example in fourth canto, we have Dhruva Maharaj, right? Dhruva Maharaj is, you will see him soon because he's going to come. Actually, no, not soon. Maybe many, many, many months later, because we're still on Canto 3, Chapter 4, actually. So anyway, but in Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to actually like connect with the Lord, but was his connection to basically attain pure devotional service? No. He wanted a material kingdom, right? He wanted a material kingdom, but just by the Lord's mercy, the Lord appeared to him, and by seeing the Lord, he got completely like taken aback by the beauty of the Lord. And then he actually said that, you know, what I was wishing for is like broken glass. And now that I'm seeing you, I'm getting the diamond. I don't even want my material desires fulfilled. I just want you and your association. And the Lord was so merciful that he gave him devotional service and also gave him that material kingdom as well. So you can see like this. Actually, I just want to clarify on this, because most of us are in that category where we come to Krishna consciousness. It may not be because we have pure devotional motives in place. Generally, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, Chaturvada Bhajante Mam, there are four types of people that come to Krishna consciousness, and they come from different motivations. So one is out of fear, bhaya, right? You connect with the Lord because you're going through distress in life, you know, you're not, you know, whatever it is, yeah, distress, you maybe you're going through some horrible situations, whether it's, you know, people connect with the Lord when in a situation of conflict, in a relationship or in the society or whatever it is, so they connect with the Lord out of fear. Then you connect with the Lord out of desire, which is asha, meaning that you want something. Like if you look at Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to connect with the Lord because he wanted a material kingdom. Some people want to connect with the Lord because they want to be prosperous and wealthy. They want to just, you know, have a better life. Or sometimes people connect with the Lord because they want to get mystical powers. Yeah, all these things are there. Then there are those people that want to connect with the Lord. They connect with the Lord out of duty, which is kartavya, dharma, right? It's something that I'm meant to do. It's my duty. It's my principle. It's my part of my heritage, my culture. I shall do it no matter what, which is good. And then the highest one is connect with the Lord out of prema, which means love. That I'm connected to the Lord because I want to love the Lord and deepen my love with the Lord. That's, you can tell, is the highest one. Krishna is so merciful, though, that if you are coming to the Lord, and let's be honest, I think a lot of us, if we were to analyze the reasons why we looked into spirituality and Krishna consciousness, it's probably a combination of the different motives there. I mean, maybe some of you may did it just for prema, which is amazing. But a lot of us, it might be a combination. The good thing is, in the Padma Purana, it says, Akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo daradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajita purusham param. Whether you have no desires, akama or sarva kamo va, all kinds of desires, or even just desiring liberation, right? Moksha kamo daradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajita purusham param. Just connect with me. So Krishna accepts you, whatever motivation you're in. But the idea is that as you're on the Krishna conscious journey, then we should try to endeavor to connect with him on the highest level. Krishna is so merciful. I remember, I've said this many times before, I know this, but you know, I keep saying it again and again. I was once driving Pankajanri Prabhu. He's one of our senior devotees. He's left a few years ago during COVID. And I was driving around, and he said actually to me that, you know, there are people that attain perfection by connecting in Krishna through the power of their sadhana, through their spiritual practices, through the quality of their chanting, the quality of their services, the quality of their studies, all these things. And then he said that we are not that. Most of us in this age are not sadhana siddhas. We are what is called kripa siddhas, meaning that we are connecting with Krishna out of Krishna's mercy. It's not that we're qualified. How good is our chanting in this age? How good is our understanding of the scriptures, right? It's really not, it's not that brilliant for most of us, right? There are demigods that are serving Krishna and doing much better than what we are doing, right? But what is actually attracting us to Krishna is Krishna's mercy that is giving to us. Now, this does beg the question, so if that means, if we're just simply kripa siddhas, does that mean that then we don't need to worry about doing all this sadhana? Does that mean that we shouldn't do the morning program and chanting and studying the scriptures? What do we think? Do we think that we should then, Krishna's giving us mercy, so we should leave this, we don't need to go through all this austerities. No, we don't, right? Absolutely. Because actually, the mercy that we get from Krishna will also be shown by our endeavor to try to connect with him, even if we're doing it imperfectly. But if we have earnest sincerity, then Krishna will appreciate that and will say, okay, I know he's doing his best, even though it's not amazing, but he's doing his best, he's trying his hardest, let me bring him closer to me. And also the opportunity to do sadhana itself is also privilege that Krishna is actually giving to us, right? The opportunity to actually delve into the scriptures and to chant these holy names is in itself amazing. There are people who cannot connect, with the holy names, who cannot connect with the scriptures. It could be because of offenses, or maybe they're just heaps of impious karma that they need to just go through, where they're just not in the space to even get into it, which is okay, you know, you just have to let them be, you know, pray for them, at some point they will connect. But we are an opportunity where we can do that. So that in itself is also like a very powerful privilege that we've actually been given here. And yeah, we are so fortunate that whatever we do, even in this world, to connect with Krishna, nothing gets lost. Krishna says to Arjuna, Neha bikrama nasosti pratyavayana vidyate salpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya. There is no loss or diminution. Even if you don't reach Krishna in this life, wherever you left off from, you will carry on. I don't know if you've noticed this. Well, some of you are probably quite new, so you may not, you know, you will see this as time goes by. You see some people, they join Krishna consciousness, and a very, very quick time, they rapidly progress to a very high standard, right? And then you might get other devotees who might be practicing Krishna consciousness for 10, 20, 30 years, and obviously they're advancing, but maybe in a more paced manner, right? And you're thinking, why is that? How come that they're growing at this rate and this person has shot up? It's because may well be that the person who's come in later but progressed rapidly, maybe they are actually done a lot of bhakti in their previous lives and they are now catching up to where they left off. Whereas the other person who may have now in this life been Krishna conscious for a while is because they may be relatively new to it and they're embarking on it in this life. Kripa Mahaprabhu once said an interesting thing. When you come to Krishna consciousness, if you see that you're kind of nicely coasting through and progressing nicely and almost seems relatively effortless, it means that you are just covering the ground that you already covered in your previous life. When you start hitting blocks and obstacles and challenges, that's most likely that's when you're covering fresh ground now. You're actually kind of like carrying on from where you left off. So, something to note. Yes. Okay. So I want to just share this one other point here, that Prabhupada very much makes it clear that being a devotee is higher than being a great sage, a learned scholar. So, what Maitreya Rishi is, he's a devotee, he's a Gyani Bhakta. Meaning that he's a devotee, but with a lot of intellectual inclination, as opposed to someone who's a devotee with just an inclination to love Krishna, right? When we come to Krishna consciousness, we may also have that, where we're not fully in the mood of trying to love and serve Krishna selflessly. We want to connect with Krishna, but we have a desire to have our intellect satisfied, or we may have a desire to get some sort of fruitive results from serving Krishna. So that means we are a Karmi Bhakta, right? Or a Gyani Bhakta. And so even amongst the devotees, there are gradations of devotees. There's actually a hierarchy of beings. In Canto 3, Chapter 29, Kapila Dev, when he's explaining Sankhya Yoga to his mother, Devahuti, he talks about various categories of beings, all the way starting from movable, immovable beings, then going up like to, you know, like sort of one-celled organisms, to like beings with like teeth, to beings with many legs, to two legs, you know, four legs to two legs, and eventually get to humans. Then amongst humans, you've got humans who don't follow Varnashram, Vedic system. Then you got humans that do follow Vedic system. Then you got the humans who follow the Vedic system and who are basically Brahminical minded, who are endeavoring in the scriptures, gyanis, you know, intellectuals. Then even amongst them, you've got the Brahmanas who have understood the Vedas theoretically. Then you've got the Brahmanas who've, and then you've got one level higher, those Brahmanas who have now understood the purpose of the Vedas. Vedeshcha sarvara aham avivedyo vedanta kriteva vedavit evacham, right? By all the Vedas I'm to be known. Krishna says that, right? So that's one level higher. Then you got those who not only understood the purport of the Vedas, but are able to convince others of the Vedas. That's another level higher. Then you got above them, you got those Brahmanas who can then follow the principles of the Vedas perfectly themselves. And then right above them, you've got the pure devotees who are basically completely in love with Krishna. They have gone beyond the Vedas and things. So now you can see why Prabhupada made it clear that Maitreya Rishi is not on the same level as, let's say, Uddhava. Because Uddhava is basically right at the apex. He's a pure devotee of the Lord, selflessly serving beyond any of the other levels. Whereas Maitreya is a devotee. I mean, it's not for me to say where he's at, but if asked to make an educated guess, he's someone that I would say knows the Vedas, has definitely got strong realizations of the Vedas, knows the purports, but not quite a pure devotee just yet. So it's important for us to know that being a bhakta is the highest of all spiritual realizations. In fact, just to demonstrate this, because some people might say, oh, we're devotees, right? This is a cop-out. Because you know you get other Vedic traditions that are very scholarly based. And they'll say, oh, you guys are just saying that just to make yourselves feel good. Well, guess what? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was the greatest scholar. Everyone's heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm guessing. If not, you will soon, because it's his appearance day coming up very soon. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was known as Nimai Pandit. He was the greatest scholar. He defeated all the big, big Mayavadis, the big, big gyanis in the world at that time. And then he actually brought them to the path of bhakti. He was undefeatable in any debates, right? Whether it's on Naya, logic, grammar, in the scriptures, in Sanskrit. And yet then, when he came to Gaya to get initiated by Ishwarpuri, the first thing Ishwarpuri said to him is, Murkho tumi, you're a fool. You think that you have attained the, you know, success through all this like understanding of knowledge and intellect. What will this do? What have you learned? You don't know nothing. In this age, you can't know any of this. Main thing is take to the holy names. So then Mahaprabhu then took the holy names. And as soon as he heard the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in his ear, it immediately transformed him. He says, Kiba mantra dile Gosai, Kiba tarabal. What kind of mantra have you given to me, O Gosai? What kind of strength does this mantra have? Japite japite mantra, kori le pagal. This mantra is making me just do this japa and I'm going pagal, I'm going mad. Now it's interesting, right? How he orchestrated it, where he showed himself to be a scholar first, to basically get supremacy amongst the gyanis, because you know, to try and get intellectuals to come to a certain thing is difficult, right? Because they're the ones who have that pride. How can you tell me you know more than me? I know more than you. I'm a PhD. I'm this, I'm that, right? To get someone like that into, let's say, your line of thinking is the more difficult than, let's say, a common guy off the street. So therefore, he proved his supremacy and his domination all over the intellectuals of the day. And then once they respected him and accepted him and followed him, then he showed to them, okay, now they accept me, now I'm telling you, this is the highest thing to go for. So yeah, this is a very good verse, that amazing verse that shows us how bhakti and bhaktas are the highest thing, and that is what we should always be aspiring for. And of course, those who are intellectuals among us, there's plenty of obviously, you know, the knowledge in the scripture to keep us stimulated, but not that we end up getting so sucked in by that that we forget the essence, which is the chanting and trying to connect through love as well. Not that we just get too much into the intellectual thing and forget the other things of bhakti, the bhakti lifestyle. Okay, thank you very much. I shall finish here. I'm conscious of the time. We've gone a bit over time, so if there's any questions or comments, then we can have one or two. Otherwise, we can...
Thank you for Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. My question is, you mentioned about Kripa Siddhis and Sadhana Siddhis, and I was wondering about what would someone do to get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada in the first place, like previously, in terms of that, in their previous lives. You know, you said that they created their devotional, that he created their devotional life, in that sense.
It's a really good question. You see, it's very difficult to say there's one thing that a person can do, because, okay, there is a very strong possibility, very, very strong. And I say this because from when you read about Prabhupada's interactions with his disciples, Prabhupada has revealed on a few cases, because he knew who they were in their previous lives, right? And it's evident that they were devotees, and they're carrying on. So, on many, many cases, to get Prabhupada's mercy, it means that they were Vaishnavas in their previous life, practicing bhakti, and now they've come to this life, where they're now in Prabhupada's movement and in carrying on with their bhakti journey. But at the same time, that's not the only demographic that comes into under Prabhupada's mercy, because there are also people who come to Krishna consciousness who may not have been Vaishnavas. They may have been practicing some sort of other mystical process. You may have Mayavadis that have come to Prabhupada's movement. Or other types of, like, or even demigod worshippers, you know, who come. And, you know, it's almost like they're going on their evolution in their spiritual journey. They've gone from, like, impersonal understanding, and now, through Prabhupada's mercy, he's guiding them towards the personal understanding, then taking them to a higher level. Again, demigod worshippers, same thing. You know, you're worshipping the demigods, life after life, maybe. Now, I'm going to show you who is the ultimate object of love and worship that you should be focusing your energies on. So, and obviously in all these cases, it's sincere practitioners, whether you're a demigod worshipper, an impersonalist, a bhakta, or just a pious person, someone who's just living in this life and like following his dharma nicely, trying to help make the world a better place. Prabhupada is so merciful, he can even accept them as well. In some rare cases, even impious people, Prabhupada may have accepted into his movement, and that's just his own causeless mercy. But generally, it's people that have done some sort of spiritual practice in their previous lives that come directly under Prabhupada's mercy, or people that have led and have accumulated a lot of piety that then puts them in that position to then get into bhakti. But I just want to also make it clear that if, let's say, a lot of us then may feel that, oh, but I have not practiced spirituality before coming to Krishna consciousness. I have not been particularly pious. That's okay. If you're here now, that means Prabhupada is obviously giving you the mercy. Yeah. Yes, Parama Prabhu. I mean, in the Bhagavad Gita, it does say that, someone who's accumulated heaps of piety, it puts them in a good position to then get into bhakti. So, just to put that there for you. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So, it's interesting how boldly and how clearly Prabhupada is saying that Maitreya is not a pure devotee. Vidura is a pure devotee, and then Maitreya is instructing Vidura later on. And he speaks, Maitreya is speaking over 1,000 verses, Canto 3 and Canto 4. And also he's referred to as Ma Bhagavat. He is the disciple of Prashara. He's a friend of Vyasadev. So it does sound a bit shocking how Maitreya is not a pure devotee. When did he become a pure devotee? I know you kind of mentioned that, okay, there's, when it says a pure devotee or devotee, there's different levels. Definitely there's different levels when it comes to a devotee. But pure devotee is quite clear, right? Mahabhagavat is quite clear. You can't have like varieties of Mahabhagavat. You can have varieties of devotees. You can have varieties of pure devotees. I mean, at least that's what how I understand it.
Yeah.
And then also the other interesting thing at the end of the verse, the word yad vichaya. somehow Maitreya ended up out of his perfect own accord. What does that mean? What does that mean, out of his own accord? So it doesn't seem like an arrangement of the Lord. It seems like there was his, somehow he was involved. Maitreya himself is involved in terms of being there.
So, okay. Yeah, just maybe you can really yeah. Okay, so there's two aspects there. I'll answer to that. I'm not an expert on Maitreya Muni, but from what I understand, there's a couple of points here. Prabhupada makes it clear when Uddhava is... Okay, Prabhupada actually mentions Uddhava is a pure devotee. And Uddhava could have actually given the full understanding of Krishna, his qualities, pastimes to Vidura himself. But Uddhava was the one that recommends Vidura to go to Maitreya Muni to learn from him. The one aspect is culture, Vaishnav culture. Prabhupada says that because even though Uddhava was more advanced, but out of the sense of Vaishnav culture, because Maitreya is more senior, Uddhava felt that Maitreya could share some things with Vidura to help him in his devotional path. So that's number one. Number two, yes, Vidura is a pure devotee. We see actually sometimes that, you know, pure devotees, before their pure devotee identity gets uncovered, you know, there's some triggers that needs to come for that pure devotion to get, you know, brought out. And sometimes devotees who are not pure can play a part in that pure devotee's lila pastime for them to fulfill their devotional destiny. So, by doing that, the person who's helping that pure devotee also elevates themselves as well. Srila Prabhupada, we know that externally Srila Prabhupada said to his disciples, don't read the writings of Shankaracharya. Don't read Sharirakha Bhashya. Because Shankaracharya is a Mayavadi, he's an impersonalist, and that is definitely the case. We are not meant to read it. However, with very, very high level, mature devotees, he said that actually you should read certain points from what Shankaracharya has said in the Sharirakha Bhashya because it can actually enhance your understanding of key spiritual concepts. So why would he do that? Because obviously, okay, Shankaracharya himself is actually Lord Shiva. We know that he's a pure devotee. He's playing the part of an impersonalist. But he's showing that even people who are not pure devotees can play a role in your devotional journey to help you to refine your own devotion, even though you might be more advanced than them. Another example, Lord Ram tells Lakshman at the end of Ramayana, when Ravan was dying, Lord Ram tells Lakshman, go learn about Dharma from Ravana. And go learn, and this is incredible. I thought this is quite mind-boggling. But he said, go learn about also etiquette and how to deal with women from Ravana. This is Ravana, right? And so actually Lakshman actually went to Ravana to learn about this. Lakshman was very reluctant to do this because he was thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to learn from Ravana. And even when he went there, he was not fully in the most respectful mood, right? And Ravana said, Ravana's like lying there, like practically dying, right? And Ravana said, I'm only going to teach you if you kind of take the position of a disciple with humility to learn from me, right? So the point I'm saying is that sometimes non-devotees or even lesser devotees can help that pure devotee in their journey to help them bring out that pure devotion within them. So it would seem that Maitreya Muni definitely played that role for Vidura. And of course, by doing that, Maitreya Muni himself is also elevating his own role, right? He's elevating his own self to that, because he's now helping a pure devotee to realize his own destiny. And by doing that, he himself is increasing his own devotion and therefore thus qualifying himself to be a Mahabhagavat. So that's my thoughts on your first point. And again, yes, Prabhupada does use the word Mahabhagavat, but again, like the words he used before, like Brahman in certain cases, devotee, Purusha. Sometimes Purusha means Krishna, sometimes Purusha means man, sometimes Purusha means humans, right? So again, with certain terms, Bhagavan, Mahabhagava, Purusha, Brahman, Bhakta, all these things, they have gradations, and you have to look at the context in which Srila Prabhupada has said these terms to know what he's meaning by them for that particular thing. So that's one thing. The second thing is, again, here, it says that he reached the spot out of his own perfect accord. So of his own accord, meaning that his own free will, of own decision to come there. So that's what it says in the verse. But if you look at what the purport says, Prabhupada says that it's not an ordinary incident that Maitreya reached that place. It's because his qualification to have his own perfect decision making was that he was a great sage who had spent his life learning about the scriptures and the Vedas and Krishna. And also, the Agyata Sukriti that Krishna had given him. So he became perfect in his decision making to reach the Lord because of his own endeavor and Krishna's mercy. So we can become perfect and reach perfect decisions because of the endeavor that we give, which Maitreya did, and also the Lord's mercy. That's why it's his own perfect will. Without those two components, we cannot make perfect decisions in life. I mean, that's why in Damodarashtakam it says, right, the way we connect with Krishna is the two fingers, endeavor and mercy. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, yes, Prajna Prabhu?
A certain person comes to mind in my experience, or maybe two. There's one who was my Shiksha Guru. She was incredible in her approach to bhakti, utterly devoted, and her devotion was uncontrolled. In other words, that no matter who she was speaking to, she only saw Krishna, or a pure soul. Like she regarded them as her superior in all situations. Like Mother Kalangana, she was totally self-giving. Even her pension, she used to buy sweets, which she made herself and gave her pension, because she knew that the temple would benefit. And even if they were horrible to her, she would still give them. You know, she didn't discriminate to these people. And another one, because springs to mind, is Jivapati, who was maybe 40 years serving here as a pujari. And he was such an amazing personality, because not only did he was sustaining the department on the backup service, but he was a scholar. He constantly listened to Prabhupada, his spiritual master. But also, that one day in his early life, he had an experience that changed his whole life. And he didn't know what was happening to him, but all of a sudden his body was overtaken with ecstasy. He was shaking. He couldn't control it. And then he said, he understood that somehow this was the greatest thing. Even though he sort of blooped and didn't stay with Krishna consciousness, he kept coming back until that day when he left, that his body would no longer work. he would do, change the Charanamrita water or anything just to get have service. And then all of a sudden he was on a life support system, but they thought, well, he's carrying, you know, he should, we can bring him round. But he was a sort of person that he could no longer, because he couldn't serve Krishna in any way, shape or form, he just left because he chose to. And Krishna granted his wish.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the association of devotees, of these wonderful devotees, which is what makes the manor such a special place. And through them, we can also get this agyata sukriti to help us make our perfect decisions in life as well. So, amazing. Thank you. Okay, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.